Welcome to Women on Air, a weekly show about women, feminism, and social justice, brought to you by CFUV's Women's Radio Collective.
Good afternoon and welcome to Women on Air. My name is Daphne Shahid and I'm the woman with the penis, and this is your 4 o'clock. You're listening to CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria, British Columbia. We also stream live online at cfuv.uvic.ca. Like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at CFUV and at CFUVGJ. Just do it. And so we have a special show today, or a good show. I wouldn't say it's any more special than any of the other shows, but today we're going to talk about a very difficult subject for most, and I'm going to say right now that that this deals with some really emotional and emotionally stressful material, and it deals with the subject of sexual assault. And so we're going to be discussing this topic as it happens in the Canadian Forces. Recently, Maclean's published an article on sexual assault in the military called "Our Military's Disgrace" in their May 5th issue. And the issue with the military is not only the circumstances that allow these violent acts to take place, but also the reporting procedure that tends to quell the victims or survivors' ability to get justice and to prevent continued assaults within the military as well. So today in studio, I'm joined with Nicola Pfeffers, a former ordinary seaman in the Royal Canadian Navy. Good afternoon, Nicola.
Good afternoon, Daphne.
Just because we're going to be dealing with something very emotional, I would just like to give everyone a few minutes if they would like to collect themselves, or if they would like to just prepare for what we're going to talk about. So in the meantime, I'm just going to play a track to start off with, and then when we come back, we'll be talking with Nicola about her experiences in the Canadian Forces regarding sexual assaults. Hi, and we're back in studio. I'm here today with Nicola Pfeffers, and this is Women on Air. So, Nicola, as I was saying, it was a former ordinary seaman in the Royal Canadian Navy. Good afternoon, Nicola.
Good afternoon, Daphne.
And so, well, let's begin. We're going to be talking about sexual assault in the military, and let's start with, why did you join the Navy?
Well, I originally joined the Canadian Forces, the Canadian military, because I felt the need to serve my country. And I picked the Navy specifically because it promised me the most travel, so I would be able to get out and see the world.
Right. And about how old were you when you joined the Navy?
I was 25.
25. And So what happens after you enlist? Like, what's the process after enlistment? Like, did you just join through a recruiting office, or was this a career choice for you, or was it just happenstance?
For me, it was a career choice. I went regular force, so that would be like a full-time soldier position. And you recruit through your local recruiting center. Every major city in Canada has one. The procedure is you start off with the basic training. You pick a trade, first of all, go through basic training, and then you go through your trade training after that is done. And then there's an environmental training, in my case, seamanship training, to prepare me for life on board a ship. So after those three courses are done, you're then ready to serve in the fleet. In my case, I was posted to HMCS Winnipeg.
Excellent. And is that a large vessel or a small vessel?
It's kind of a large frigate. They're called CPFs, Canadian Patrol Frigates, and they're kind of the workhorse of the Canadian Navy. It's the majority of the fleet consists of frigates.
Right. Okay. And so what was the after the enlistment process, you went to like a boot camp?
Yes, basic training.
And then after the basic training, what happens after the basic training?
There's a trade training course. So in my case, my trade that I picked was electrician, marine electrician. So I went on a trade training course to teach me about electricity.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And then after that, do you immediately ship out somewhere, or do you have a home stay for a period of time after basic training?
It's normal to have a period of time alongside after you are put into the fleet to kind of get your feet wet in a more gradual process. But in my case, I was deployed immediately after my courses were all done. My courses finished on a Friday, and quite literally I was deployed on the Monday after that, which is highly kind of irregular.
Wow, that's fast.
Yeah, I had 10 days notice to deploy.
Wow. Were you excited about that?
I was very excited, yes.
Yeah, very excited to be going on your first deployment, your first ship.
My first deployment,
Did you know anything about Winnipeg before you were deployed?
No, I just knew that she was going on a deployment and that I wanted a piece of the action. So, yeah.
Nice. And so what was the atmosphere like arriving to the vessel you arrived in Hawaii, right?
That's correct. Yeah, I met the ship in Hawaii as it was sailing from Hawaii. Everybody seemed really nice at first, and got a lot of help. You know, if I was getting lost, you know, in the hallways and the flats, of people would give me directions. They were quite nice about that. But for the most part, there was this kind of aloofness to people. If I wasn't in their department, they didn't really want to associate with me. In the culture of the Navy, everything is stuck within your department. Like, you sleep with your department, you work with your department, you eat with your department. Everything is very insular to your department. So once I found my department, I thought I had kind of found my place on board. They were quite welcoming at first.
So this is a really compartmentalized and very, very structured environment.
Absolutely, yeah.
And how were you made aware of your position within this hierarchy? Like, I mean, there's the general kind of chain of command, but isn't there also kind of the unspoken forces of hierarchy and power within the dynamics of the group?
Yes. For example, my job description while I first started was Molly, which is the Navy slang for dishwasher on board, which is kind of like the most hated of all jobs that every junior ranked person has to do eventually. So that was the job that I was given right away as the youngest ordinary seaman in the fleet. So.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so, but right off the bat, when you became the Molly,
yeah.
there was kind of treatment that violates kind of some of the military's own rules, wasn't there?
That's correct. So the very first day the ship sailed out of Hawaii, my very first day sailing, I got to meet the senior cook who I'm supposed to report to as Molly. And he started off addressing me simply as girl. And he wouldn't refuse. He refused to use my name or my rank as you're supposed to. He just referred to me as girl. And the more I didn't answer to that, he just got angrier and yelled it louder and louder until I answered him.
Did you respond to that? Did you say that that was incorrect protocol or?
Absolutely. I immediately told him that, you know, you can address me as my rank or my last name, but you can't call me girl. And it was kind of downhill from there. That was considered talking back, and that was sexual harassment, but it was considered talking back.
Right. So reminding superiors of protocol gets you into trouble.
Absolutely. That's what I...
And not following protocol gets you into trouble. So
yeah.
You're kind of... it's kind of a lose-lose situation for any lower-ranking persons.
Yes. Yes, it is.
So how many people are on board a Canadian frigate?
Roughly 240 when they're deployed.
And about how many of these would you say are self-identified women?
I would say between 20 to 30, and most of those are officers and not in the engineering division that I was in. The engineering division, which consists of electricians, hull techs, and stokers, is kind of the very last male bastion in the Navy on ship. It has the least amount of women of any other department, any other division on ship.
And so the engineering department is very heavily masculinized. Would you say it was in your experience, misogynist and sexist environment to work in?
Absolutely, yes.
And so what happened? What happened once you were at sea?
Well, I basically developed a reputation for talking back, which was me defending myself against sexual harassment. And the reputation kind of just spread. And In my first foreign port, my boss, petty officer first class, about five ranks above me, tried to seduce me in a foreign port in Okinawa. And when I refused his advances, as soon as that port was done, and we were sailing again, he basically piled a bunch of secondary duties on me that no other people in my department had. So I had three other secondary duties while everybody else didn't have any. And he basically worked me into the ground till I was exhausted and till I basically snapped at one point. And then he had me charged for insubordination, which is a very serious charge. Mm-hmm. He basically did everything he could to make my life a living hell after I rejected his advances.
So there was immediate repercussions for not returning this your superior's advancements.
Absolutely, yeah.
And what were you thinking at this point in time? I mean, you're not only away from home and at work, but you live and sleep and spend 24/7 with these people on board of a contained ship.
Yeah.
Where there's no police, there's no like real access to the same kind of resources that are available in, say, you know, the city of Victoria. If you were here and that happened, you don't sleep and shower and everything at your work, right? You return home. There's also sexual assault centers, then there's services, and there is, so what do you do when you're on board the ship? Do you just contain it within yourself? And
yeah, with regards to the trauma that I suffered, it's you kind of just keep going, and you kind of just get this tunnel vision, and you just treat every day individually and just try to get through the day. In my case, I sort of personified the ship because there was nobody else really willing to make friends with me at this point. So my best friend was HMCS Winnipeg.
Well, so you're feeling isolated. You're isolated by your fellow crew because there's obviously a rumor mill on board that goes around. And so you fought back your superior's advancements and you became a pariah, basically.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, you know, the military has protocol that's supposed to be in place where fraternization is banned. Like, there's not supposed to be any kinds of fraternization within military ranks, right? So, you know, it sounds like your superiors just had a complete disregard for the protocol and the guidelines and the rules that are in place to protect everybody. And also on top of that, that even when they were breaking them, there was no kind of path or avenue for you to take to prevent or arrest that situation while it was in progress.
Absolutely. And these people know what they're doing. They prey upon the junior ranked women, and they get them alone so that there are no witnesses, and they know how to do that. So definitely, yes.
So basically the Canadian military is structured in such a way that it favors sexual predators.
I would say so. Yeah.
And you're writing or you wrote a book about your experience. I know you're probably still editing it, but you've written a book about your experiences in the military.
I have. I wrote a book called The Black Deck, and it's a memoir. It's nonfiction, and it just covers my deployment experiences in 2009 when all the sexual assault occurred when I was on the Winnipeg.
Can you read us an excerpt from your book?
Absolutely, yeah. So only the names have been changed. Otherwise, everything is accurate to my memory. In an attempt to avoid the crowds, I'm doing as many of my workouts as possible at night now. I just got off the mids watch, and now I'm jogging on a treadmill on two deck outside the engineering office. My world is bathed in dark red light, and I slip into a disorienting feeling while I run on the same treadmill to the same music over and over again. I've lost track of how many times I've done this exact action. I don't know how long we've been at sea for now, but it seems like I've already lived a lifetime here. A few people pass me while doing rounds, a metal triangle dangling from their belts. I run and feel tired and try not to watch the digital clock count down how much longer I have to go until I'm done. I run, and Donald is walking past me heading aft. He's one of my bosses as well. He glances over at me, and suddenly his gait falters. He slows his walk right down and stares straight at me while he passes by as slowly as possible. I'm suddenly aware of the sweat running down my body in the equatorial heat, and my choice of clothing, which is a tank top and shorts. I glare angrily in the low light while I run and try to ignore his eyes. My workout is finally done, and I'm wiping down the machine with a cloth. Suddenly, Donald's appears as I'm about to head forward to the showers. He blocks my path and starts to talk, mumbling something about my training progress, all the while his eyes stare unabashedly at my breasts. I stare back at him incredulously. He isn't even trying to hide his prying gaze. My arm shoots out and I reach for her then. I grab a cold metal pipe and hold on to Winnipeg. She moves gently beneath me. I feel trapped in such an extreme self-consciousness. I don't want to be here anymore. The sexual tension has been increasing on board, and I've been trying to ignore the way people tend to stare when they think I don't notice. I am exposed, skewered. Finally, he clears his throat, and I don't know how much time has passed while I cling to her while he gets his fill of me, but now he's moving on, and I'm left alone in the dark red flats. That is the last day that I wear a tank top on board ship. From now on, it's baggy t-shirts.
Well, that's some powerful writing, Nicola, and you're excellent at giving voice to what you've experienced. And I really like how you personify the ship, and that became, the ship became
shelter
for you. Yeah. While at the same time, it was the vessel that these experiences were taking place.
It was a pressure cooker. Everybody was trapped together.
Yeah. But you love Winnipeg.
I do. I still do.
Yeah. And wow, that's powerful stuff. And so what's the name of your book?
The Black Deck.
And so what is a black deck?
Okay, so in the engineering world of a frigate, the Canadian frigates, the black deck refers to one of the furthest reaches of the ship that you can possibly get to. It's right by the stacks where the exhaust leaves the ship. So you have to go down into the engineering spaces and the engine rooms first, then climb up these ladders that are along the stacks. And so it's the furthest reaches of the ship, and it's very dirty and very dark. And it's so dirty that it's just simply painted black. Instead of trying to clean it, they just paint it black. So it's called the black deck. And I took it as a metaphor for the extreme isolation that I was experiencing due to my experiences and where I was in my life at the time.
Was the black deck somewhere where you could escape and just go kind of be and seek shelter from other people? Like, this isn't a very well-traveled area, the ship, is it?
No, it's not. It's very remote, and nobody, the saying on board is nobody goes there unless they absolutely have to. Absolutely, when I was in the black deck, I was completely alone, and nobody was staring at me, and nobody was trying to have sex with me. Nobody was glaring at me because they hated my looks or anything like that. It was just me and the ship, basically.
So a place to be alone, just you and Winnipeg.
Yeah.
Well, we'll be right back to talk more with Nicola Peffers, a former ordinary seaman from the Canadian Royal Navy, or the Royal Canadian Navy.
The Royal Canadian Navy.
I thought it was just Canadian Navy.
It used to be. It changed in 2010.
Now it's Royal again. Why are we Royal again?
I couldn't tell you. That was a decision that happened way above my rank, so I don't know.
Well, I guess we're the Navy's Royal again. So a former ordinary seaman with the Royal Canadian Navy, and we'll be back talking with her after we return from this short break. You're listening to CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. We also stream live at cfuv.uvic.ca. Like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at CFUV and at CFUVDJ. My name is Daphne Shaid, and this is Women on Air, and we will return in a few minutes. I'm kind of a little bit discombobulated right now, and I don't know why. I think it's just the... it seems like in the communities that I work within, we talk about sexual assault a lot, and we talk about these these subjects and what goes on, and we talk a lot about getting over these things, and we talk a lot about moving on. We talk a lot about building awareness and stuff, and it seems like some of the women that I talk to that have been working in these communities for 20 years are still in the same place and still are seeing the same amount of like prevalence of rape culture and of sexual assault that they did 20 years ago. And it just, it upsets me. When I was women's director at Camosun, I was part of the relaunch of the No Means No campaign, the 20-year-old campaign from the Canadian Federation of Students to address rape culture and to address sexual assault and so on. And when I was launching that campaign, one of the teachers stopped by when we were tabling and said, I remember tabling when I was on student council, you know, 18 years ago. So it just makes you think, like, all these campaigns and all this awareness that we try to get out in the community, and what kind of effect is it having? Like, what are we doing wrong, and that we haven't been able to dismantle and to cause this awful culture of rape and sexual assault and victim blaming to decline? And I think those are questions, at least the ones, these are what we're asking in the communities that I work within here in Victoria. So coming up on June 8th, which is a Sunday, at 11:30 a.m., Slut Walk is going to be taking place here on the Lekwungen and Coast Salish territories. It's everyone's going to be gathering at 11:30 in the morning on June 8th on the legislature lawn, and we're going to be marching from the legislature up to Centennial Square, where there'll be various speakers, myself included, talking about rape culture and sexual assault here in Canada. So if you like, you can join us on June the 8th at 11:30 a.m. on the Ledge Lawn. I hope to see a lot of people there, and we can continue addressing this. And so we're going to continue our talk with Nicola Peffers, who is a former Royal Canadian Navy Ordinary Seaman, and who has written a book and has been actively discussing about her experience with sexual assault in the Canadian military. And welcome back, Nicola.
Hi, it's good to be here.
So, excuse me, there was, because you were in this place in your life, aboard the ship, and this was your dream job. I mean, this was you wanted to be in the military. You wanted to be on a ship, and I mean, it was almost like these places are built for sexual predators and the system that serves to undermine survivors and shield the culprits at the same time. I mean, this was really what was happening with you. You were attempting to report it. You were standing up to these people that were making these advances on you, and not only advances but violating military protocol and so on. And yet you were the one that was almost made out to suffer from just the act of standing up for yourself.
Yeah, I remember actually going to my unit harassment advisor at one point. Every ship has a unit harassment advisor, and he actually just came up to me and said that he'd been compromised and to find somebody else. So there was no support there either. And it was mostly the senior ranks that were preying on the junior ranks, but even the junior ranks had their predators. There was one leading seaman that's equivalent to a corporal who used to come up behind me when I was on the bridge at night where it's really dark, and he would just whisper in my ear, "I can smell you." And he admitted to me that he had a rape fantasy while I was alone on the upper decks at night one night, and that he wanted me to play the rape victim.
That sounds absolutely terrifying.
Yeah, it was, because we were alone on the upper decks, and there was a lot of machinery noise, and there was nobody around to witness it. So, you know, if he had wanted to right then and there, he could have, he could have raped me, and I just had to get away to where people were, because that's, you know, I learned quickly that that was safe to be with people, and to be alone, you just get used and in trouble.
So if this was a regular workplace where you were treated like a human being rather than a sexual object and being sexualized constantly by the ranks above you, and would you still be sailing and on, like, at sea aboard Winnipeg if these events wouldn't have transpired?
I believe I would be, yes. Unfortunately, because of all the harassment and assault that I experienced on the deployment, I came back with PTSD and apparent bipolar disorder. So I was actually medically released. So I had no choice in the matter. I had to leave the military. If you have bipolar disorder, you can't serve in the military. But I had a medical technician tell me one time, if you go to Afghanistan and you come back with issues, you have PTSD. If you go anywhere else in the world to come back with issues, you have bipolar disorder. It seems to be a trend in diagnostics in the military. And there's a bit of a political background here. PTSD is environmentally caused, according to Veterans Affairs, and therefore there's compensation, whereas bipolar disorder is genetic, they've decided, so there's no compensation at all.
So wait, they basically discharge you.
Yes.
On the premise that you are mentally unfit.
That's right.
With a genetic disease, saying it's bipolar disorder, and they don't have to pay any further benefits to you because it was non-environmental.
That's correct. And I actually, when I was talking to Veterans Affairs, because I also, for the PTSD, I was looking for compensation from that, they even said to me over the phone that rape needs witness statements.
And so if there's no witness to the sexual advances or sexual assault or touching or groping or anything like that, then you basically have no case whatsoever with the military police.
That's correct.
So when you first reported this, like, tell me about your experience with the military police when you actually went to report this.
I went in to report two instances of sexual assault from the deployment. One was when my boss in Okinawa tried to seduce me. He was playing footsies with me while he was almost naked, just wearing underwear in a trailer by himself with a lot of beer. And the other instance was on ship. And another one of my bosses groped me around my lower right hip area and pulled me into himself and said, "How you doing?" So I reported those two instances to the police, the military police. And they basically, a few months later, decided to close the case without investigating. And they told me that my reported instances did not meet the criteria for assault under the Criminal Code of Canada.
So what exactly does that mean? That your assaults didn't meet the criteria for the Criminal Code of Canada? I mean, we're talking about your superiors breaking numerous, not only Canadian laws, but breaking the military's own laws around fraternization and sexual advances.
That's correct. Well, my civilian lawyer disagreed strongly, and so did the Victoria Sexual Assault Center, also disagreed strongly. They both told me that sexual assault is defined as any unwanted sexual touching anywhere on the body. So I continue to posit that I have been sexually assaulted twice, but there's no justice because the military police refuse to see it that way.
So according to your experience with the military police, then taken from what you've told me, then that means that sexual assault only it has to go beyond just touching. So it has to be like penetrative.
You would have to be something more extreme, I would guess.
And there has to be witnesses.
And there has to be witnesses, exactly. And they were very unprofessional with how they handled my complaint. I wrote a witness statement, and two pages had they removed two pages from the witness statement and then doctored the page numbers to look like the pages had not been removed, and then handed me that copy from my own records with two pages missing. So the paragraphs didn't line up as you turned the pages. It was obvious that it was disjointed and that there was missing information. So the lawyer basically informed me that that was tampering with evidence.
And did you alert them to the missing pages?
I did, and they said that to come back and just do another witness statement altogether, which I did. And then I also filed a complaint using the Military Police Complaints Commission against them. And that took almost a year to come back. All of these proceedings take like about a year to come back. It takes a long time. And it was decided that there was no instances of incorrect conduct, basically because the memory of the military police member was better than mine. They had decided for the instance that had happened. So they sided with the member of the military police and not me.
And then on top of that, the military police also deemed that your case wasn't fit for investigation, and so they didn't even investigate at all.
That's correct. There's no investigation whatsoever.
And wasn't part of the process with the military police, wasn't there a hang-up with your case because of, what did you call it, improper formatting?
Oh, so yeah, before I went to the military police, there's a document in the Canadian Forces called the Canadian Forces Harassment Prevention and Resolution Guidelines. And it's a beautiful document outlining all these rights that the individual has to report and go through resolutions for harassment and so forth. It doesn't work that way in the real world, though, at all. I used that document to form a complaint document for all the harassment and assault that I had experienced. And that went to Ottawa and came back almost about a year later. And it had been shot, every single allegation that I'd brought forward had been shot down based on lack of witnesses or improper formatting.
So what is improper formatting? Like, a report is a report. If you're complaining about something, did they improper formatting, basically you didn't double space or?
Yeah, the military is very particular about format. So there's certain margin sizes and indentation sizes and spacing and font size and very specific guidelines that I did my best to follow as an ordinary seaman with limited skill in that area, for the ones that had witnesses that looked promising, they were shot down for formatting errors.
That's astounding. So were you given any training when you went to basic training before you were deployed? Were you given any training about how to respond and how to report sexual assault in the military?
I was given, I believe it was like a one course, like a couple, few hours of PowerPoint presentation on the Harassment Prevention and Resolution Guidelines document and how to use it. And how to use your chain of command to lodge a complaint. But there was nothing about any real-world skills about how to keep yourself safe, like staying in groups, for example, or how to say no, or anything along those lines, or even to expect it.
So it sounds like even though the Canadian Forces seems to have guidelines and harassment policies in place, it sounds like, from what you've told us, that they don't really work, and they certainly don't work within your own best interests. I mean, at one point when you have to report a sexual assault, you have to report it within your chain of command, within your compartmentalized department, right?
That's correct.
And so I think you were telling me that at one point when you had to report a sexual assault, you actually had to report it through the chain of command, which meant reporting it to the very man who had sexually assaulted you?
That's correct.
This sounds...
Which is why I didn't do it until I was posted off the ship. I waited a couple of years before I reported any of this because I was still under the boot of this boss that had sexually assaulted me. I was basically quite mentally ill at this point from all the stress and PTSD, and they compassionately posted me off the ship a couple of years after we got back. And that's kind of how the military handles instances of harassment and assault, they take they remove the victim from the situation, not the perpetrator. And the victim is usually lower ranked, and that is usually a detriment to their career because you need to stay on ship in order to gain experience and get the skills and the courses under your belt for your promotions and all that stuff. So, yeah, they remove the victim, which doesn't help their career at all.
No, it sounds like if you choose to report it, you are basically killing your own career within the Canadian Forces.
Yeah, that's basically it. And the only reason why I reported it was because of the diagnosis of bipolar, and so I knew that my career was over. So I knew that any repercussions didn't matter anymore because I was leaving.
But that diagnosis probably wouldn't have come if you wouldn't have been under such a stress load with the advancements in sexual assault and mental stresses that you were undergoing and being terrorized by these men on board the ship.
Yeah, that's correct. Probably.
So, yeah. Wow. This is Women on Air. My name is Daphne Shahid, and we've been talking with Nicola Peffers, who is a former Royal Canadian Navy Ordinary Seaman. And Nicola has written a memoir, a book, about her experiences in the Royal Canadian Navy and about the assaults and about the culture, the military culture that's on board these vessels, and it's called The Black Deck. So, is there a plan to publish this book, or can people find out more information?
I do intend to publish. I'm still editing it, and I have an editor in Vancouver at the moment that I'm working with. I don't know exactly when it'll be published, but I'm hopeful. I know there's a couple hoops it has to go through, just to make sure I don't get up on treason charges. So I have to be very careful about what I can and can't say with regards to the military when it gets published.
Well, thank you for joining me today in studio, Nicola, and very powerful story from you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. It's good to be here.
All right, you're listening to CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. We also stream live at cfuv.uvic.ca. Find us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at CFUV and at CFUVDJ. My name is Daphne Shahid, and this was Women on Air.